Welcome to the Domestic Fuel Cast, a podcast devoted to news and information about alternative fuels and energy, produced and hosted by Zimcom New Media.
Understanding what the auto industry wants and needs and how ethanol can meet that, all while battling big oil and even the government. I'm John Davis reporting. The ethanol industry is battling big oil on the amount of the green fuel it wants in its petroleum-based product and the government rules that would regulate that. But the ethanol industry also seems to be fighting a battle to get information it needs to serve one of its customers, the auto industry.
What does the auto industry want, and what do the refineries do?
Dave Vandergren is the co-founder and president of one of the world's largest ethanol plant engineering and construction firms, ICM.
We felt this was important because nobody in the ethanol industry was trying to build a relationship with anybody in the auto industry. And we were making assumptions about refining and how what refiners do and why they like or dislike us. I tell you what we learned was so different than what we thought.
He says they found out the auto industry was nervous about E15. But not for why you might think.
Not because it was 15% ethanol, is because it would be more crud, more high boiling products they could put into gasoline, and that would create issues for the auto industry, for their catalytic converters and their injector systems and things like this. So there was no upside to the auto industry to have higher blends of ethanol.
So basically, oil companies could sell dirtier gasoline, a problem for the car makers.
That's what they were concerned about, because that's what they did with E10. E10 started in the, in the early 2000s as a mid-grade fuel, just adding 10% ethanol to regular, and they were making a mid-grade. As time went on and ethanol got more momentum and more available, and the alternative to ethanol, the MTBE, was banned, all of a sudden the oil industry looked at it and said, well, I guess we're stuck. The only oxygen that's available to us is ethanol. Okay, so they started blending the 10%, but then they went back to the, to the laboratory and said, okay, under our fuel blending ASTM requirements, you know what? Ethanol is below the mid-range of gasoline, so that means we can put more of these higher boiling point products into the gas and still be within spec. So they began putting more of these high boilers into the gasoline pool, knowing that 10% ethanol would be added to it. It's these high boilers that are creating all of these fine particulates because they don't completely burn. It's kind of like saying, I've got a bonfire out in my backyard, and it's all kinds of smoke coming off of it. Why? Because it's not a controlled burn. And so all the smoke you see is unburned carbon.
Vandergren says a new white paper from the Urban Air Initiative, a group that looks to reduce the threat to public health posed by petroleum-based fuels, and one that he and his brother, who authored the white paper, are involved with, shows it doesn't have to be that way.
What the auto industry wanted, they wanted E15, but they wanted it splash blended to E10. They wanted E10 to be the standard fuel, and if you want to make an E15, you splash blend it, which splash blending means you're not changing the base gasoline. So you're making a bob like they are today. RBOB, they call it, and you're blending 10% ethanol with that, and you end up at an 87 octane regular gasoline. So what they want to do is you take that same Bob and you add 10% gasoline or ethanol to it to get to 87. Then you add another 5% and you get to 89. And then, you know, eventually add another 5% to that, another 5% or 10% or whatever. But don't change the base gasoline. That is what the auto industry wants, so that they can get higher octane. Because what they're being required to do in getting higher mileage and more efficiency out of the autos, they've got to start doing direct inject. They've got to start doing downsizing of the engine. So they need a better fuel if they're going to get the same performance with a smaller engine. Ethanol is a high octane fuel. Octane is what you need to get performance out of a small engine.
And just a small bump up to an E15 blend, if it is done with the same high-quality gasoline that E10 is currently blended, it could be a much cleaner burning fuel.
If you could get rid of the last 5% of a gallon of gas, okay, if you could remove that top 5%, you would also remove 45% of the toxics that comes out of burning that gallon of gas.
Vandergren says, despite being able to do this right now, they're having trouble getting the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, to move on it.
Literally, they have the authority to do it tomorrow. Will they? I doubt it. I think there's influence. The petroleum industry has a ton of influence everywhere. They have influence in the EPA. They have influence in the Department of Energy. They have influence in a lot of these governmental organizations, and they spend a lot of their resources to make sure they're in the know.
He points to the example of how the EPA used a very high-quality fuel not available to customers at the pump when it certifies the fuel mileage estimates you see on the window stickers of cars, a fact most people don't realize. EPA could easily certify E30 as a viable fuel, but another battle the Urban Air Initiative takes on in its white paper is an EPA study that tries to paint the fuel in a bad light.
It became obvious to us that under the Clean Air Act, under RFS, EPA is required to report to Congress on what effect ethanol and gasoline had on air quality. The ability to make this test show that higher blends of ethanol is actually worse was really quite brilliant. This was really quite a feat. They even had to bring in a fuels engineer from Chevron to help them do it, to figure out how to make these bizarre fuel blends that even the EPA says in their own paper that this doesn't work in the real world. That's a quote from them. They know these fuels won't be sold. They know these fuels won't be produced. They did not monitor octane, which is the most important part of fuel composition. It is almost obvious that the intent of EPA was to make ethanol look bad, so that they could go to Congress and tell Congress that higher blends of ethanol are actually worse than no ethanol at all. And why they would do that, why they did that, I don't know. But this was no accident. This fuel testing, this EPAC study, and had we not identified this and done this evaluation and wrote this report, EPA would be going to Congress and telling Congress that ethanol is bad, and all of a sudden we would be on the defense again, and probably a death blow.
Vandergren believes that a real driver for ethanol could be if consumers had more choices.
The important thing that we need at this point in time is blender pumps and flex fuel vehicles, so that the consumer can choose the fuel they want. I mean, they can choose an E10, they can choose an E85, whatever makes the most sense to them. In Brazil today, all gasoline is E25. Now, each one of those can choose between E25 and straight ethanol, neat ethanol. And based on the price at the pump, they can choose. That same opportunity, if we could do that here in the U.S., would not only give some competition to the oil industry out there, it would benefit the consumers because there would be competition and they would have a choice.
He even makes the case that if that choice was available, there wouldn't be a need for any kind of renewable fuel standard. Consumers could set that standard. I'm John Davis reporting.
You've been listening to the Domestic Fuel Cast, the official podcast of DomesticFuel.com. Check out the website daily for the latest good news about the alternative energy industry.